footage. Oh, I should also say, like in Houston, not wearing body cameras. Again. Here is Fox News showing how there were protests outside of Susan Collins' main office following the shooting in Biddeford, Maine.
17 minutes past the hour right now. Anti-ICE protests outside the office of Senator Susan Collins after a deadly shooting in Maine involving an ICE agent. This is Biddeford, where the shooting happened, about 25 minutes south of Portland. Our correspondent Alexis McAdams is reporting live here in New York City. She's got the latest details on what is happening there. Alexis?
Hey, Sandra. So as you can see here on your screen, this is a live look at what's going on in Maine. We know federal agents are trying to piece together everything that happened as witnesses tell local media that ICE agents surrounded a car and repeatedly ordered the driver to get out. Then seconds later, we're told they heard gunshots and it was also captured on surveillance video. Listen to this.
As we mentioned, some of the footage is so gruesome. We're not going to play it here, but Troy Jackson, who a lot of the Plattner volunteers think is the best candidate to carry their campaign forward, was at these protests.
He's also DSA endorsed, I'll just add.
In the Maine gubernatorial race endorsed by DSA, he showed up to show solidarity with the protesters. He believes in abolishing ICE as well. So that's all going on in the backdrop of Maine politics right now. And this was another important point by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because in June, around a month ago, a month and change, the House voted to send $70 billion to the Department of Homeland Security and ICE, which is the second time under the Trump administration, or the second Trump term, that they've sent a package of multi-billions of dollars to the Department of Homeland Security, to ICE. And it was an 115-day, essentially, standoff because Democrats were refusing to fund ICE and Border Patrol in the wake of the killings, in particular, of Preddy and Good. We know now that ICE has killed 11 people on our streets, including this latest instance. And that standoff worked. Republicans did end up circumventing Democrats, I should say, by going through reconciliation to fund ICE. But AOC makes the point that this is why funding is the key issue here. Here she is on Capitol Hill responding to this latest killing.
Congresswoman, any reaction to the ICE killings in Maine and Texas?
I'm still taking a look at all of the details, but once again, this is not... I said this a couple of weeks ago, that I would not be surprised if when ICE funding started up again, that we would start to see more civilian deaths at the hands of ICE, and that's exactly what has happened. When you open the trenches with all of this money that Republicans have now funneled to ICE, without any oversight or anything, you're going to see abuses of power. And that's exactly what's happening. You notice that, you know, we didn't see things like this happening with the same degree of regularity when we froze the ICE funds. Right. And now that they've been opened up again, we're seeing multiple incidents now. So,
right. Thank you, Congresswoman.
Thank you.
And that point is central to understanding why funding and the issue of abolishment is the only issue that we should be the primary issue that we should be foregrounding here. These are institutions that respond to incentives and funding and not finger wagging and body cameras on top of the fully funded institution that's already doing this, for example, which actually, when you look at the, you know, technology companies and even what ICE wants, that would be putting forward this technology for body cameras.
They love it.
They love it because it gives, yes, in these more narrow instances where ICE is killing people, that might provide evidence. But for the overwhelming majority of interactions with people, it's going to be another way to gather surveillance, to surveil them and gather biometric facial recognition data that Palantir has in terms of these contracts with ICE. Like, anybody that's talking about body cameras, absent abolishment, is, as I say, not a serious person for those reasons. Because AOC lays it out. You can see and track the level of violence and lack of accountability and map it onto when funding comes in and out. So let's not let anybody obscure what power is here. Money is power. State infrastructure and the way that it's funded in that manner is power. And you can't just put a cherry on top of a turd and say, hey, body camera time, we're going to fix this whole thing. No. This agency should not exist. In a moment, we were going to be talking about Trump and the OMB's assault on research funding. But first, a word from some of our sponsors here. One of our favorite sponsors is Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth now, I can't even count the amount of products that I have in my apartment that are from Cozy Earth. I've got a robe that I basically wear almost every day. I've got these clogs. I've got my duvet cover. I've got joggers. I mean, Cozy Earth is basically kind of a disproportionate part of my everyday routine at this point. So, and I just can vouch for how high quality the products are, how frequently I use them, how happy I am to have them, and how long I've had them. Because, you know, especially with your sheets and in the summer like this, you gotta make sure that they're temperature regulated. And Cozy Earth sheets during the summer help you stay cool instead of warming up with you. And the fabric feels different from cotton sheets, especially on hot, humid nights. They're breathable. And they also have these beach towels, which are excellent because you can just feel the quality. And it's great if you want to pick up a beach towel and head to the beach this summer. But their sheets help you stay cool on these hot summer nights, especially if you have air conditioning that's on the fritz. Cozy Earth sheets are phenomenal. But again, it's not just their sheets. They've got the duvet cover. They've got the joggers and the apparel that I'm a huge fan of. And I've honestly been starting to get Cozy Earth pajamas as gifts for members of my family until they figure out that I'm doing this for a lot of them. I'm going to keep going. So Cozy Earth has a wide array of products that you can get as gifts for yourself. And Cozy Earth stands behind everything they make. They have a 10-year warranty and 100 nights of hassle-free returns on bedding. Made from viscose from bamboo, it's breathable, soft, and built for summer. Head to CozyEarth.com and use code MAJORITYREPORT, one word, for an exclusive 20% off. That's code MAJORITYREPORT for an exclusive 20% off. And if you see a post-purchase survey, mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here. Thanks to Cozy Earth for sponsoring this message. Again, that's CozyEarth.com/MAJORITYREPORT for an exclusive 20% off. We will put a link down below in the video and episode descriptions and at majority.fm. And here is a word from one of our other sponsors, but Sam will give you this information.
Hey, folks. You know, it's summertime now, and my son is at camp, which is, you know, bittersweet because I miss my son. But of course, it also means that I don't have to do as much at home. But how do I deal with this in the winter, in this fall, the spring? Summer's so short, too. He's only gone for a couple of weeks. But how do I deal with all, like, making sure this kid eats something good every night? Factor Meals is my secret weapon. I mean, it's not a weapon. It's good. But it makes it super easy for me to provide for my son delicious meals for me too, frankly, and without having to spend an arm and a leg and without having to, like, clean up the pans, clean up the spatula, buy the ingredients. Factor Meals. Factor Meals are ready prepared meals that are delivered right to your door, and they cook in about 2 minutes. Not even about 2 minutes, literally 2 minutes. It's for years, I never understood why people had microwaves. I didn't understand it. Now I totally get it. Saul at one point got into steak. And I was like, all right, that's, you know, if that's what you want. I mean, you're a growing kid. But, I mean, we're not going to go steak. I mean, let's not get crazy. But Factor Meals has fantastic filet mignon. And I've got him to try it with chimichurri. You know what that is, right?
Yeah.
Chimichurri is delicious. And the dude is surfing turf. Filet mignon and shrimp. And speaking of shrimp, I had a delicious shrimp and grits. And I like the stripped chicken, like taco bowl. They have so many delicious meals, and their menus change all the time. Want to thank Factor for supporting the Majority Report. Go to factormeals.com/majority50off. That's all one word. Factormeals.com/majority50off. Use the code majority50off to get 50% off. And free daily greens per box. Every meal is crafted with functional ingredients. Lean proteins, colorful vegetables, whole foods, healthy fats, and Factor has meals built around your lifestyle. You want protein-rich dishes for muscle growth, like my son does now, who has discovered his muscles. They are fresh, never frozen. They are ready in 2 minutes. They have a ready-to-eat salads, Asian crunch chicken. Factor shops, preps, cooks, and delivers right to your door. Head to factormeals.com/majority50off and use the code majority50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with a new subscription only while supplies last until September 27th, 2026. See the website for more details. We will put the link at in our podcast and YouTube descriptions and at majority.fm. Now I'm starving.
We are back, and we are joined now by Elizabeth Janexi, former NIH program official for 22 years and publisher of her eponymous Substack newsletter, so you can look up her name, here to discuss how this new OMB rule could gut NIH and community funding. Elizabeth, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me. I think this is such a boring topic, and that's why most Americans haven't heard of it. And it's why I've tried over the past 45 days to scream at the top of my lungs, so to speak, on Substack and make it interesting.
Well, we deal with boring and wonky here all the time, so I can guarantee you, you are not the most boring topic that we've had on this show before. And people should check out your Substack and newsletter to stay updated on this, because just a little background on you. You're a 22-year veteran of the NIH, meaning you've worked in the federal government through multiple administrations, or you had, including the first Trump term. You resigned and took the early retirement, which allowed you to keep some benefits as they were gutting the federal workforce. What made the second Trump term so different than the first one?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. The first Trump administration, they sort of left NIH alone until the pandemic hit. There were a couple of wacky things here and there. I remember, for instance, hearing rumors that Kelly Conway was going to come over and help with the opioid epidemic research, which seemed weird, but there wasn't anything, you know, you might giggle about, but there wasn't anything traumatic until COVID hit. And then, you know, of course, everything seemed to start going south from there, but we weathered the storm, and there was this sense that on both sides of the aisle, the National Institutes of Health is pretty popular because we produce all the major medical breakthroughs for the American people, and the return on investment is consistently positive. For every dollar that is put into NIH, we get about 256 cents in economic output on the other side. So, you know, we all thought, oh, we'll be okay in the second term, but little did we know that there was a document called Project 2025. Have you heard of it?
We have. We've definitely covered it extensively on this show, but I'm sorry that you had to deal with it in practice.
Yes. So it was SWIFT, and they had an unexpected assist from Elon Musk and his Doge boys. And they were quite ridiculous and terrifying at the same time, gutting programs, eliminating whole agencies like USAID. And they did quite a lot of damage to the Health and Human Services, our colleagues over at the CDC and FDA. And of course, NIH was not immune this time. So while many of the leaders thought, oh, they'll leave us alone, they were wrong. And as soon as they came in and really stopped all of our work and started canceling our grants, because they were doing AI searches on the grant terms and looking for woke terminology and nonsense like that, it quickly became clear that my job was no longer what it used to be. And that's, I was also at a place that's slated to be eliminated by Russell Vogt, and I didn't know how it would turn out. And because I was eligible for the early retirement, I decided instead of staying for the trauma, I would get out.
I mean, it's unconscionable that you were put in that position as a veteran of public health who'd served the American public for over two decades. And I think that public health piece, the public service piece, is what is so threatening to right-wing forces and what united, say, Project 2025 and DOGE. You know, before we get into specifically this rule change and the imminent danger of it, I just love your reflections a little bit on how mistrust in science from COVID and the stoking of that level of conspiracism impacted your work in the federal government prior even to your resignation.
Yes, that's a really great question. And I think what the folks on the far right, and, you know, we're talking about extreme libertarianism here, people who just basically don't believe that our tax dollars should go to things like biomedical research. But unfortunately, it's popular. So they had to have a hook, right? And what they generally do when they want to get a hook is they try and scare people. And they use mis and disinformation. That's their go-to, right? I think it's a playbook from Putin and other authoritarians who like that playbook. And it plays well. They can make TikTok videos and X videos, outlandish tweets that people believe. So there was a whole slew of mis and disinformation that was pushed out during and after the COVID pandemic, blaming Dr. Tony Fauci, blaming a lab leak, blaming NIH specifically, saying that somehow NIH funded the research that led to a lab leak. And there's no evidence for any of this. All of the available evidence, and, you know, it was very hard to get evidence from China, but the evidence that we have gotten and the consensus among all the reputable epidemiologists and virologists out there is that this mostly likely was a jump from animals to humans, perhaps through the marketplace and or some area in China, not a biodisaster lab leak. And but it had traction, And in the first Trump administration, or at the end of the Trump administration, we had a lot of research, in fact, that was looking at the spread of mis and disinformation via social media, and a lot of efforts to try and combat that with more effective public health messaging. And a lot of that research was shut down because Republicans demonized it. And there are researchers whose whole careers were destroyed because they were tracking and found that almost all of the mis and disinformation about COVID was spread by a very small handful of bad actors on the internet. It was not a groundswell of people that were doing this. And the Republicans who were in charge of Congress at the time shut all of that down. So we kind of had an inkling of this, but I don't think anyone realized that they would then, in the second term, use all of that as an excuse for dismantling the agency.
Pretext leads us, I guess, to the current day. We had a caller, one of our viewers, last week, who alerted us to the severity of what is happening here. And I believe that yesterday the public comment period ended. We have an IMer who wrote in Science is Political saying, "So happy you're talking about the OMB proposal. Yesterday ended the public comment period with 94% of the over 300,000 comments opposing this." So despite that comment period ending, there was a lot of pushback. What does this rule say and what does it mean?
Right. So the Office of Management and Budget is just an office in the White House that is sort of a pass-through. Congress, as you know, appropriates the money for programs and any kind of program you can think of, from science programs to social service programs, health programs, education service programs, disaster programs, programs for seniors, programs for veterans. You know, we could go on and on and on. A lot of those appropriations are dispensed through the agencies via grant mechanisms. And for the better part of a decade or more, the OMB has been the sort of pass-through. And they have had, in the Code of Federal Regulations, here's where the boring parts come in 2 CFR Part 200, was a sort of rule book, if you will, for how those grant dollars should be dispensed and best practices for audits and what the costs were allowed for and so on and so forth. So it was typically called by most people the uniform guidance document, because it would provide uniform guidance to each of the independent federal agencies, who then had experts like NIH and NSF and DOE and on and on and on, have the policy and grants experts to make sure that those federal dollars in grants are sent out within the law, following policy, and so on and so forth. And so that, you know, we could track the monies, make sure it's properly spent, that there's no fraud, there's no abuse. So we are all, you know, dialed in for that for decades. In fact, the science agencies in particular have been expert at this for over 80 years, right? So this was just a guidance document. And Russell Vogt, in his second term here, learned a lesson from the last time. When he's tried to cancel grant programs just outright, he gets sued. And usually the courts say no. And that's what happened.
Well, it violates the statute. I mean, it violates the law. A rule can't override a statute. So, well, at least in theory.
Yeah. And right there, he wasn't using a rule. He would just use an executive order and say, we're going to cancel everything woke, right?
Gotcha.
And so the courts would say, no, that's arbitrary. You can't do that. So this rule, which was an old rule, he decided, okay, I'm going to get around the courts. And here's how I'm going to use it. I'm going to use the uniform guidance document, and I'm going to rename it. It's no longer going to be uniform guidance. It's going to be called regulation for federal financial assistance. And if you look at this 400-page document, every place where the word guidance previously was written has now been replaced with the word regulation.
And I'm sure they used AI.
Yeah, and guess who the regulator is? Him, right?
Yeah.
And instead of allowing the different agencies the autonomy to spend these dollars according to their individual statutes. This document now centralizes the control and says that any grants that are going to be given must now be approved by political appointees. So rather than each agency who has a process, mainly at NIH and the science agencies, we would use scientific peer review processes to figure out what we were going to spend. Now, instead, it will be someone from the Trump administration who will decide which science grants will be paid, which education grants will be paid, which disaster grants will be paid, and so on and so on and so on. And not only that, every grant program now must be deemed to effectuate the priorities of the administration. So they can say, you don't fit what we think is our priority, and we are going to cancel you, or we're not going to fund you. So these are the big changes now. They can cancel at will. They can cancel anything that they consider woke or anti-American. And they keep throwing out these fake justifications, saying that they're trying to get rid of fraud, waste, and abuse. But they never show any evidence of any of that because there is none. It's a lie. But they're using those same mis- and disinformation campaign strategies to justify the existence of this rule. And it will basically take control away from Congress and say, whatever Congress appropriated, we don't care. We're going to be the say-so of what grants are allowed to be given in the country.
So what does this do to the very nature of scientific research when there's, at its outset, no impartiality?
Yeah, it's really crazy. By law, in statute, the science agencies are required to rate the grants that come in to them by scientific peer review. And that's how the decisions are supposed to be made by law. And so now that process will continue, but in a sense, it will be a sham because, and this is actually, unfortunately, already starting to happen and has been happening at the National Institutes of Health in advance. So they're sort of obeying in advance. Grants that get great scores in the scientific peer review and the scientists like me who want to fund a particular grant now have to send that grant up to some political person at Health and Human Services who then reviews it again. And it takes them, A, a long time, and B, they come back with comments that sometimes make no sense because these are not people who are qualified to judge these grants, and they've already been judged. So we're seeing instances of grants that are not being paid that are perfectly ready to go. We're also seeing instances of whole programs of research being canceled for non-scientific reasons. A perfect example, we are on the verge of creating a cure for HIV/AIDS with a vaccine. And they have completely canceled and shut that down. We could have had this going and a cure for that within the next 5 years, and now we're not going to.
I mean, this is eugenicist in its impulse. I mean, that gets me my blood boiling right there.
They've canceled research on pandemic preparedness. They've canceled any research on mRNA vaccines, which were pivotal in saving lives during the COVID pandemic. And they're shutting down any and all research that involves looking at minoritized populations or people who experience health disparities, right? So if you are in a group that is more likely to get sick or more likely to get diabetes, or for some reason, we're not allowed to study that and we're not allowed to spend our dollars on that anymore because it's considered DEI, which is ridiculous.
I mean, it might be DEIA, which is accessibility. I mean, this is also going after people with disabilities. I saw Trump yesterday say something about how he's a believer in the horse race theory, talking about Lindsey Graham, essentially saying some people have genes and survival of the fittest that are, you know, that will let them survive and some people don't. Like, that is what his impulse is. And it means that anybody who's marginalized, if you're have HIV/AIDS or if you have some sort of disability, he doesn't think it's worth the federal government's time to look into ways to help you. And like, what does this do for the United States' role internationally in medical research? I mean, this might be the end.
Yes, it's bonkers. So for the last 80 years, we have been a leader in biomedical research for the world. And it has led to outcomes that the private market would not have funded, right? You know, you can see, like, let's say heart disease, leading cause of death in the United States, and NIH-funded research has led to a 56% decline in heart disease from 1950 to 1996. Cancer transformed, right? We've got treatments for lung, breast, prostate, childhood cancers. We have immunotherapies now, and that has converted previously fatal diagnoses into manageable conditions. Do we really want political appointees to choose which one of these new treatments should go through to a phase three clinical trial? Do they have the expertise to do that? No. And then on health disparities, the NIH is statutorily required to study health disparities. And we're also required, as is the National Science Foundation, to diversify the workforce. So to fund trainees from all different backgrounds, because you know what? That makes for better science. That makes for better outcomes when we have diverse perspectives and diverse populations participating in our scientific endeavor. We get better outcomes. There's research that proves all of this, and all of that is being shut down based on ideological reasons that because they can't say to the American people what their actual reasons are, which is they don't want the money to go to this, they make things up. They say NIH caused the pandemic, which is false. They say there's waste, fraud, and abuse, there's false. And then you even have ridiculous things. Some of the Congress people say that they're funding transgender mice experiments, which is also ridiculous. So almost every excuse that they give for implementing this rule, which will shut down science, is made up and dismiss and disinformation.
Now, this doesn't just impact scientific research. I want to make that clear. I know we mentioned this briefly, but if you could lay out what this rule change would also impact.
That's right. So in this country, a lot of states really rely heavily, ironically enough, the red states even more so, on federal dollars to provide many services to our citizens. So let's take education, for example. Everyone's got public schools in their communities. A lot of the teacher training programs, a lot of the special education programs are, especially special education, can be kind of expensive because you've got few numbers of students and you've got to have lots more resources. So there are federal grants that are dispersed to the states for these purposes. And those could be on the chopping block. There's programs like Meals on Wheels, right? Very popular for seniors who are having difficulty getting around. They can have the services brought to them. That's a program that they want to cancel. Heating assistance in the winter. How about broadband infrastructure? The Biden administration's infrastructure bills is allowing for broadband to be installed in rural communities around America. They want to cancel all these things. They don't want to spend money on programs that benefit the people. And I'm afraid that this bill or this rule is going to be essentially giving them a free pass to just cancel anything that they want. As a matter of fact, just this past week, I was out riding my bike and I took a break and I opened my phone and I saw a video on Instagram announcing that the transportation secretary, Sean Duffy, is going to cancel any transportation that is related to bike lanes in America because Bike lanes are DEI, so get ready, folks. If you have bike lanes in your community, that funding is going to get canceled because it's woke.
I don't understand how diversity, equity, or inclusion is involved here, except to say, like, it's just people that care about the environment, maybe, God forbid. I mean, it's just astonishing. Well, I mean, there's a lot more I could talk to you about, but people should check out your Substack if they want to learn more about this. Elizabeth Genexi, we will put a link to your Substack down below in the video and episode descriptions and at majority.fm. Elizabeth, lastly, what can people do, even though the open comment period has ended, to raise the alarm about what's happening here?
Well, the good news is that the tally came in late last night. We've got almost 500,000 people who commented, which
wow.
is amazing. But if you didn't get a chance to comment, or even if you did comment, we're recommending you send your thoughts about this directly to your electeds, right? You've got two senators, you've got a congressional rep. It's very easy to send them an email. Everybody has a web page and you can click Bing and send an email. Send your comment to them. Send your outrage to them. Tell them that you don't want your community grants in the hands of Russell Vote to be canceled, because that's what's coming down the pike. They will pick and choose the programs that they like and the programs that they don't like. And I expect to see a lot of cancellations. Over the past year, they have tried to cancel over $30 billion in grants, and the courts said no. So those things are now going to be on the chopping block.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth. Really appreciate your time today. And as always, as I mentioned, we'll put all those links down below. And we also, in our description, always have the Capitol switchboard link that people can use to call. But as you say, written is probably better if you have the ability to do that. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, quick break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Peggy Flanagan, Lieutenant Governor of Minnesota, who is running for the United States Senate. We are back, and we are joined now by Peggy Flanagan, Lieutenant Governor of Minnesota and candidate for United States Senate in a primary that is August 11th. Right, Peggy?
That's right. Yep.
All right. August 11th. So you heard it here first, folks, or hopefully not, because this is an important Senate race. You're facing off against Angie Craig, who has been backed by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who hasn't had the greatest record thus far in this election cycle of picking candidates. So what are you hearing from Minnesota voters about their satisfaction with Democratic leadership in general?
I mean, I think as, you know, we've traveled all across the state of Minnesota, you know, I've done over 250 events, the majority of which have been in greater Minnesota. What people are telling me is that they are sick and tired of Democrats who are fighting from a defensive crouch, kind of nibbling around the edges. And they certainly are governing by sternly worded letter. And I'd say are pretty dissatisfied with Washington in general. And frankly, I am too, which is, you know, why I'm running for the U.S. Senate.
And when they say fighters, you hear that a lot. And sometimes I think that you can have Democrats that describe themselves as fighters, but it's not resonating in the same way. Like, for example, my district, Dan Goldman, was just unseated by Brad Lander. And Dan was a previous impeachment lawyer for Trump. And even in the instance in Colorado with Milot Kyros's race, she also was involved, her opponent, DeGette, in the Trump impeachment. So that's like that's a fighter, right? But I think people are not really resonating with the fighters that maybe fought but lost, right? They previously lost and Trump got back into power. And there's a lot of anger about that. So How do you distinguish your fight from how other Democrats describe their fight?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, for me, the fight is for actual people and not for big corporations and special interests. And I think that is, frankly, at the root of almost every problem we are facing in this country right now. I think the difference between, you know, myself and my primary opponent, Congresswoman Nancy Craig, is, you know, that I am not taking a dime of corporate PAC money. And that is essentially like how she has fueled her entire political career, right? With, you know, crypto and health insurance companies, big oil, AIPAC. And, you know, I want to be beholden only to Minnesotans. And, you know, I can sleep just fine at night by saying I'm not taking corporate PAC money. Because I think that's like how people in this moment are identifying fighters. If you're not aligned with us, if you're not willing to go, you know, to the mat on the things that we really care about and call out like who benefits from it being this way right now, I think people, you know, people are over it and they're dissatisfied. And so that's, you know, what I define as a fighter is who are you fighting shoulder to shoulder, right, alongside, you know, and who has your back as well. Right. And for, you know, for us, I'm super clear that this whole campaign is about the many versus the money. And, you know, I'm with the many. And I think that is what we're seeing happen across this country and race after race after race is people asking the question, who are you fighting for and who are you beholden to?
And we have an IMer that says called Cat is my friend, writes in saying, thank you so much for having Peggy Flanagan on. I live in Minnesota and I've been seeing nothing but Angie Craig ads on social media and YouTube. Lots of money being spent against her, which is what you alluded to there. How super PACs and these dark money 501c4 groups that have been spending, gosh, I'm seeing $1 million a week. I saw other, you know, figures in the millions as well with these dark money groups that are funneling money into your race and funding ads against you. You mentioned crypto, but also AIPAC, oil companies as well. Tell us a bit about some of these ads and what their impact has been and who their funders are.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, there's been $13 million spent so far. It's like a tsunami of dollars that are coming into this race, right? And we haven't seen anything like this in a Democratic primary election before. And so I think, you know, the thing that folks should be asking themselves is, why, right? Like, why are all these dollars coming in support of Congresswoman Craig? And I think the primary answer is because these special interests know that she'll do their bidding, right? And 2024, when she was running for Congress, the crypto industry spent $1 million to support her in her race. That meant that, you know, she then turned around and voted for their dream bill, which I think ironically is called the Genius Act.
Yes.
Which is allowed Donald Trump, right, to enrich himself to the tune of, you know, $1.4 billion in his.
It's because I'm so smart. It's because I'm a genius. That's why they called it that.
Exactly. That's right. You know, and like in Minnesota, we care a lot about the Minnesota State Fair, and Emma, I hope you come check it out sometime because it's my favorite. And on the very first day of the State Fair, Congresswoman Craig was in Jackson Hole at a resort at a crypto conference. She's the only Democrat to attend, and she was essentially the opener for Eric Trump. So crypto invests, they know what they're going, you know, to get. The same with, you know, big oil. She voted to allow drilling on public lands. You know, health insurance companies who are backing her as well. She stands in opposition to Medicare for All. I'm for it enthusiastically. And I think this is just continues to be, you know, that folks can just see in, you know, in real time. They're supporting her because they know that she'll do their bidding. And when it comes to AIPAC, they have been her largest funder throughout her entire political career. You know, and she's very strategically said, well, I don't take AIPAC PAC money in this race. But we know that, you know, they've held over 12 fundraisers for her, one hosted by the head of AIPAC. And so I don't take AIPAC money because my values don't align with AIPAC. And, you know, she is one of 16 Democrats total, and the only Minnesota Democrat who voted in favor of sending, you know, 2,000-pound bombs to Benjamin Netanyahu. And so this is, I think folks have really been paying attention to races across the country. And now, you know, there's a big focus on Michigan, as there should be. But there is a race, I think, that really is an example, right, too, of what is happening in this party and the kind of future that we want. Do we want corporate Dems who are, you know, essentially bought by special interests, or you want people who are, you know, fighting for real folks? And, you know, that's the choice. So I'm glad that people are starting to tune in to what's happening here.
You mentioned AIPAC, and I think many Democrats are starting to realize why this issue is resonating with voters across the country. One, I think, you know, especially for young people, I say this anecdote a lot, but I got interested in politics during the Iraq War, and the Obama campaign inspired me in that primary race. I was, you know, 14 or something, or 13, but because I couldn't understand how anyone could vote for Hillary Clinton because she'd supported the Iraq War and the barbarity overseas and what that war really was. And it was a litmus test for humanity and values. And I feel that we're back here again with the genocide in Gaza, and the fact that, you know, it doesn't seem like Democrats really learned from that energy with the Obama campaign. Part of what catapulted him to victory was that he stood in opposition to the Iraq War, and the Democrats have lost a lot of moral standing on this issue, particularly with young people. How would you reclaim that in your candidacy? And, you know, if you could expand on your views on blocking arms sales to Israel, for example.
Sure. So I'd say a couple things. Well, one, I am excited to hear about what radicalized you as a 14-year-old. I'm a mom of a 13-year-old who absolutely is paying attention. And that's, you know, that's a good thing. You know, for me, I am very clear that we have to use every tool in our toolbox to prevent human suffering. The same values that I have that have been behind, you know, supporting free breakfast and lunch for kids at school are the same values behind, you know, not sending additional weapons to Israel. The absolute devastation watching children suffer who don't have access to food or medical aid. And this most recent report that came out from the UN that literally talks about the targeting of children and infants. I can't in good conscience stand by and say that that is okay. It is a genocide, and we have tools at our disposal that we should utilize when we see egregious human rights violations. And so, you know, I spoke out a little over a year ago when Bernie Sanders introduced, right, his resolutions blocking, you know, weapons sales. And that's all it took for AIPAC to send out a fundraising email calling me a threat in support of my opponent. You know, and that's OK, because I think we are in a moment where there is pretty clear what's right and what's wrong. And I know, especially as a Native American woman, the idea of a homeland is really important to me. And knowing that the suffering that's happening, Palestinians deserve self-determination. And I still believe that we can get to a place where we can have peace in the region and, you know, can can do more than what we're doing now, but it's going to take sending leaders to Washington, who I think represent the majority of Americans and how they feel about their taxpayer dollars being spent, you know, in this way when there's so many people who are struggling right now here at home.
And some of the struggles also include, you know, many people in Minnesota who at the beginning of this year were victimized by ICE terror. And gosh, this in the past 7 days, we've now had two more killings of people on the streets. And I don't care what their documented status is. They're our neighbors and they're Americans just like all of us. By ICE, and Minnesota was at the forefront of activism against ICE at this time. Now, or earlier in the year, I should say. Now, is it true that your opponent voted for the Lake and Riley Act?
That is true.
And okay, so could you expand on that and why? You know, how possibly somebody who voted for the Lake and Riley Act could adequately represent the people of Minnesota who so heroically stood up for ICE against ICE earlier this year?
So, Emma, that's a good question. And like, that is, you know, the question I think that people should be asking. It was not a surprise that Donald Trump has a mass deportation agenda. It was literally on, you know, signs behind him at every rally, like in all caps that said mass deportations now. You know, I remember the first training that I went to with the immigrant rights organization was in December of 2024, because we knew what was coming. Yeah. And on the, you know, third day of the second Trump administration, Congresswoman Angie Craig was the only Minnesota Democrat to vote in favor of the Lake and Riley Act. And, you know, for folks just, you know, to let them know, the Lake and Riley Act essentially strips due process away from immigrants and allows for the indefinite detention of adults and of children. And I believe that this was absolutely, you know, the policy that essentially gave, you know, Donald Trump and Stephen Miller the green light to terrorize our communities. As we have watched, right, the killing of Renee Good and Alex Preddy and now Juwan and Lorenzo as well. This is, I think this is a core of this race, because not only did she vote for the Lake and Riley Act, she stood by that vote even after Renee Good and Alex Preddy were killed, and only recently said that she regrets, you know, the vote. But she also voted to praise ICE while they were separating families in Los Angeles last summer. So I think we can stand with the immigrant community all of the time, not just when it's politically expedient. And, you know, that's part of what this $13 million is trying to do. Reinvent, right, Congresswoman Craig's record, right, to essentially, you know, distract from the fact that she's voted with Donald Trump more than any other Minnesota Democrat and bragged on her website that she votes with Tom Emmer 45% of the time. You know, those are not my homies. Those are not the folks that I am interested in aligning with. And, you know, I think we are at a time when we get to have, you know, bold, courageous leadership that stands with the community, and we shouldn't have to compromise our values in this moment, especially after everything that we have been through and what we continue to see play out from this, you know, completely lawless agency.
We have a few IMs I just want to read to you before we let you go, just from people who are in Minnesota. Nathaniel Hornblower says, I want to add that I am Jewish and I am voting for Peggy because of my beliefs. Josh from Minnesota writes in, Peggy had the second best speech at the state DFL convention. I don't know who is more mad at Kobe, Amy for the challenge or Peggy for being slightly upstaged, LOL. So I'm not sure what that's in reference to, but it seems like you get what...
Heard, yeah.
Okay. Snarkonorsky, Minnesota State Fair is awesome. Seedart, hot dish on a stick. I kid thee not. Matt from Minnesota, Peggy... Say it again.
They're speaking my language. It's my favorite thing.
I guess we have a lot of Minnesota viewers. Matt from Minnesota says, Peggy, please restock the pride pins. The stickers aren't lasting in the heat.
Heard.
So there you go.
Absolutely.
And one last one, Nathaniel Hornblower says, I also live in Minnesota and will be voting for Flanagan. I can't wait to attend her rally with Bernie on the 20th. So I guess that's a good place for us to kind of wrap here if you want to talk about that upcoming rally and also how people can support your candidacy if they would like to.
Sure, absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for this opportunity to chat with you today. We're super excited that Bernie is coming to town. We're doing a rally at the iconic First Avenue, where Prince first got his start next Monday,
wow.
the 20th. Yep. And so it'll be Bernie, Senator Tina Smith, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, and Attorney General Keith Ellison. So just invite folks to come and to rally as we get ready for this primary election. And people can visit peggyflanagan.com to learn more about the campaign, to donate, or to volunteer.
We will put a link to that down below in the video and episode descriptions. I did have one more IM because this is not even a question, but hungover substitute teacher says, tell Peggy Flanagan her earrings rock. So big hit, the earrings. I couldn't in good conscience let you go without communicating a compliment about your earrings, woman to woman.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank you. I have a strong earring game. And so I appreciate it. Very much. It's kind of my thing. So thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Peggy Flanagan, Lieutenant Governor of Minnesota, and also candidate for U.S. Senate, against Angie Craig in the primary, which is on August 11th. Thanks so much for your time today, Peggy. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Emma.
All right, folks, with that, we're going to wrap up the free part of this program and head into the not so free part where we will take your IMs. Maybe we'll take a call or two, but we have a lot of fun sound today. I just want to plug a few different things. I sent this earlier, the link. It's an A New Policy link that you'll see. So right now, if you would like to, there's a lot of calls to action, I think, in this episode, but this is fairly immediate and urgent.
This is the most insane thing in of this, I mean,
yes.
I guess maybe I won't use a superlative. This is a very insane thing of this year.
Yes, exactly. Good qualifier. There's been a lot. But we will be talking more about this subject in the fun half. But if you want to go to this link, you can tell your senator to block the National Defense Authorization Bill until it is this part about permanently merging the United States and Israel's defensive and intelligence capabilities is removed. Chris Van Hollen has been leading the charge on this a bit, but it's a very good chance that this gets pushed through. Benjamin Netanyahu is a big fan of this. That's why he's going on TV and saying, we don't need U.S. military support anymore.
Because we are going to be the U.S. military very soon.
Exactly.
Who needs alimony when you could be married?
There you go. So that is dangerous. We actually
diabolical.
We want a divorce from Israel. We don't want to be pushed into this abusive marriage anymore. So if you want a divorce from Israel, write to your senators, and the link will be there, and you can just put in your information and tell them, not without debate, urge your senators to block the defense bill until U.S.-Israel defense and intelligence integration is debated.
How did we get to this point?
Why should we even debate it, actually,
I'm
being sarcastic.
Why should it be even suggested by anyone and not laughed out of the fucking room? Uh-huh. We have a completely diabolical world order, and a Congress, apparently, that is completely corrupted by this sort of stuff. Like, this is absurd. What other country would we be doing this for? I mean, we're going to have, we talked to Brendan and Noah of Blowback about their new piece on the Israel-U.S. relationship and that sort of thing. But, I mean, this is, and we're going to actually have Brendan on a Jacobin show on Friday. But this is lunacy. that we would be thinking about integrating with these fucking lunatics.
More integration. More.
We should, one, completely cast them off and not sell them any kind of, I mean, BB guns even. And they can figure out how to be good neighbors.
You can plug that Left Reckoning and Jacobin then when we're on that topic, Matt.
Oh, yeah, there will be a Brendan James Jacobin show on Friday. Mm-hmm. And coming up after the show today, a interesting show. We have Sam Karras of the Big Bend Sentinel talking about the Big Bend border wall, which everybody hates, except the contractors that are going to get the contracts to build it. And Ishmael Johnson of Dallas Morning News talking about affordability in youth sports. Soccer in particular, which I have to call it soccer because people get confused if I call it football. I understand.
Don't listen to people like that.
But yeah, youth soccer, how expensive it is and how expensive sports get. He's got a great thing on that. Because Alexi Lawless is like, who's going to pay for all this free soccer? Well, it's like Ishmael makes a point. Do you want to win? Because other places are investing into broad talent and not just capitalizing on the individuals when they do elevate themselves above the field, as we do in America, not just in soccer, but in basketball as well. We're not creating a good system when you just capitalize on the individuals that instead of cultivating a broader set of talent. But anyway, that will be coming up after the show today.
I'm instituting a new rule that if you write in and say that soccer's actually football, you're banned from the show. We're canceling your membership. We're canceling it.
Yeah.
Words in English in different countries mean different things. Again, it's a lift, not an elevator in the UK. I wouldn't be going up to them and going, it's elevator! Okay?
I mean, pedantry is really, it's just as somebody who is qualitatively tested very highly on like sort of verbal and vocabulary stuff. Like, it's very stupid to be pedant.
Okay, way to sneak that in.
That
there.
Was a wild way to say that.
I'm pulling rank here.
Now I really want you to drop below 10K on Instagram, like, just to humble you a little bit.
People are like, technically, you can't use that word this way. Yeah, I can. I just did.
Look, I'm not someone to be giving lessons in humility anyway, so...
When somebody tries to be a pedant, I say this to them.
You are not a New Yorker. You have no clue.
Okay, I'm going to need to know the context, and apparently it's coming later. But... as a reminder, this show relies on your support. Join themajorityreport.com. If you don't mind, it helps us stay resilient.
It's the best way to support us.
It's the best way to support us, and it helps this show keep chugging along. All right, quick break, and we're going to head into the fun half. See you there.
Okay, Emma, please.
Well, I feel that my voice is sorely lacking on the Majority Report.
Wait, whoa. Look, Sam is unpopular.
I do deserve a vacation at Disney World. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Emma to the show.
It is Thursday.
Yeah, I think you need to take over for Sam.
Yes, please.
No. I'm gonna pause you right there.
Wait, what?
You can't encourage Emma to live like this. And I'll tell you why.
So was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Sushi and poker with the boys. Someone's offered a tour.
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
What?
Tour. Sushi and poker.
Tim's upset.
Tour. Yeah. Sushi and poker with the boys. Someone's offered a tour. Sushi and
that's what we call the biz.
Tour. Sushi and poker with the boys.
Right.
Tour. Sushi and poker.
We're gonna get demonetized.
I just think that what you did to Tim Pool was mean.
Free speech.
That's not what we're about here. Look at how sad he's become now. You shouldn't even talk about it. I think you're responsible.
I probably am in a certain way, but let's get to the meltdown here.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Oh my god.
Tour,
wow.
Sushi.
I'm sorry, I'm losing my fucking mind.
Someone's offered a tour.
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
Logic.
Tour, sushi and poker with the boys. Boy.
Tour. I think I'm like a little kid. I think I'm like a kid.
Had this debate 7,000 times.
I'm
losing my fucking mind.
Some people just don't understand.
So I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but like, I absolutely think the U.S. should be providing me with a wife and kids.
That's not what we're talking about here.
It's not a fun job.
Twerk? That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Real thing. Willy Wonka twerk? That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Real thing. What's that offered to twerk? That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Real thing. That's twerk a real thing. That's a real thing. Real thing. What's that offered to twerk?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rogan has done it again.
That offered to twerk? That's a real thing. That's
poker with the boys. I think he might be blowing it out of proportion.
Real thing. That's poker with the boys. That offered to twerk? That's a real thing. That's poker.
Let's go, Joe.
Sushi and poker.
Things have really gotten out of hand.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
Illusional.
Twerk.
Deluded.
Sushi.
You don't have a clue as to what's going on. Live YouTube.
Sam has
Twitch.
The weight of the world on his shoulders.
Poggers.
Sam doesn't want to do this show anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
It was so much easier when the Majority Report was just you.
You were happy. Let's change the subject.
Rangers and Knicks are doing great.
Now shut up. Don't want people saying reckless things on your program.
That's
now,
one of the most difficult parts about this show.
This is a pro-killing podcast.
I'm thinking maybe it's time we bury the hatchet.
Left is best. Trump. Violet.
Twerk.
Don't be foolish and don't fucking tweet at me and don't bitch. The way Emma has cucked all of these people.
Love it.
That's where my heart is, so yeah. I wrote my honors thesis about it.
Oh,
sorry.
She wrote an honors thesis. I should hand the main mic to you now.
You are to the right of me on foreign policy.
We already fund Israel, dude. Are you against that?
That's a tougher question. I have an answer to.
Incredible theme song.
I Bumbler.
Emma Viglin, absolutely one of my favorite people. Actually, not just in the game, like period.
We are back. It is the fun half of the Majority Report. War on Christmas Adventurer says, this show relies on your support, and your membership will be canceled if you call soccer football. Matt, would you call this a paradox or a contradiction?
No, I don't think there's any paradox at all, because it's contingent on your support, and support is more than just financial. It's also
emotional.
Not being a pedant.
Yes, and also supporting American, essentially, nationalism, which is that, maybe not, I'm stretching it too far by saying that calling it soccer is...
Yeah, I don't
a part of the American National Project.
I would not take that tack. I would say it's.
Are you a patriot or are you not?
I think I prefer the thing of like, oh, actually, you guys started calling it soccer, and then you get mad at us for differentiating our hand egg from it.
That's the real bannable offense. You get a warning if you correct us and call it, say it's called football, but then you get banned if you say hand egg. I think that's super reasonable. Okay, all right. So we're kicking this off with a Matt special, a cold clip that I have yet to see yet. Here we go.
Well, this is a whole segment. There's several clips here.
Oh, good.
And none of them are on the sound sheet.
But, okay, awesome.
Mr. Mamdani stands accused of trying to erase Italians. The Free Press is on it.
Good.
Because they are very, very
solidarity with other marginalized groups.
They love identity politics over at the Free Press. And so they are standing up for these Italian guys who feel slighted because the Mamdani regime... presented a map of all the immigrant communities in New York and left off Little Italy. And it doesn't matter that the map was originally made under Eric Adams or whatever. But it's Mamdani. It's clearly he hates Italians. So here's the Free Press going to Little Italy to talk to some guys about it.
Mayor Mamdani, I give you a year. You are not a New Yorker. You have no clue.
I'm Isabella Redjai, and today we are here in Little Italy asking the locals how they feel about one of the oldest immigrant communities, Little Italy, not being included.
All right, let me pause it for a second. So Little Italy is now, like, notorious for being a tourist trap that doesn't have the best Italian food in the city, which is a shame, because I feel like people are being misled when they go there a little bit, but it's been hollowed out and it's now just like really expensive apartments.
You're basically doing an ethnic cleanse.
Okay.
It's just a place to go get a mommy's little meatball shirt. It's like all it is.
Exactly.
I don't know. When I walk around there as a Polish German ethnicity guy from North Dakota, it seems authentic Italian to me.
Donnie's immigrant enclave map.
I don't consider you to be my mayor.
I think it's disgraceful for mayor. What he's doing. He's got to be fair to everybody, and he's not fair to everybody. He's not fair to the Jewish people, which he makes everybody notice he's not fair to the Jewish people. He's not fair.
Not Jewish people who he has an high approval rating with. Maybe we'll get to that today or tomorrow. But anyway, here's a little bit more.
I love when conservatives bring up fair.
Right. It's not fair.
It's fine. The crybaby. This is just crying.
Isn't life not fair like their slogan?
I thought that's what. Yeah, right. And now that all they want are. I mean, and Trump said that too. And all he cares about are participation trophies as well.
Yeah. The Irish people. And now he hates the Italians.
Irish.
For what reason? What do we do to them that he should hate us?
They always sort of pushed us to the side. I got it. Yeah. In other words, Little Italy, they take care of their own problems. And we're always pushed aside. And I think it's about time that we have to be firm about this. Otherwise, we'll totally be forgotten.
If you understand what took place here over 100 years ago, between 1880 and 1920, when the mass migration of Italian immigrants first came, this was the stepping stone for the Italians.
Well, the Bari family came here 120 years ago from Sicily. They were immigrants. They landed down in what's known as the Five Points. Grandma started the San Gennaro Festival.
That right up there, that is Grandma.
That is Grandma. Grandma from...
That Grandma from the Grandma Slice?
Okay. From the Bari family, as in Weiss?
No, Slice. I mean, you know, the Grandma Slice?
Yeah, look, I was riffing and rhyming
with
you.
I didn't get you.
Styling and profiling.
Oh, it's the Free Press.
It's the Free Press!
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Sorry, that is Grandma. I'm not a New Yorker. I just don't know. That is Grandma. That is Grandma.
Okay.
I don't consider you to be my mayor.
So,
put it back up. I need to see Grandma.
Yeah, that's pretty much the end of it. I just need to get to the his. That's Grandma.
needed to.
Well, just for the canon of the show, because that's on the soundboard now.
Okay,
oh my
good
God.
To know.
Anytime.
That is Grandma.
Instead of that is Mother, we're going to use that for other.
I need you to make Grandma blah, blah, blah. That is Grandma.
That's so Grandma.
Queening out. That is Grandma.
You know, so PBD, of course, look at the drip on PBD.
I know, he's an Italian face. This is so rude.
He's got the Yankees.
It's actually racist, Brian.
Yeah.
I wonder, is that just one chain that has the cross and the Yankees logo on the same chain, or is it two chains?
That's two chains.
That's two chains, but it should be one, and that would go sell like gangbusters in certain parts of New York. Sorry to racially profile Italians.
I give you 1 year.
So better in New Jersey.
You are not my host.
Sorry, Matt. Go on.
Well, yeah, sorry. We're trying to get to this important news of PBD covering the Little Italy ethnic cleansing.
What about your mobility?
Let me just slow down here because I do watch PBD sped up.
So look at his glasses. That is Grandma.
It is.
You are
Grandma Queen. Sweetie, you are just so grandmaing right now.
That is Grandma.
Grateful for is the fact that this guy wasn't born in America. Because if he was born here, you know what this guy would be? He'd
president.
Be the number one candidate for president.
Yeah, baby.
Ahead of everybody. He's just too good on what he's doing. And while this is taking place in New York, another story comes out Mamdani's immigrant map omits Irish, Italian, Jewish contributors to New York City. New Yorkers are criticizing Socialist Mayor Mamdani's administration for touting a map celebrating the city's immigrant enclaves that omits the Italian, Irish, and the Jewish communities that have been such integral parts of the Big Apple history.
And the Jewish. Mamdani's deputies hold on. Promoted, I'm sorry. Where is Little Ireland and where is Little Jewish? I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about.
Also, I haven't seen the map, but is it like current immigrant enclaves or is it all communities who came here 150 years ago?
Yeah, right. I mean, okay. I would like to see the map because I know that Mamdani walked it back because it was Adams that did the map and he did recognize Little Italy. Will the Free Press correct their story?
Well, we got to get through that.
I'm sorry.
Let's skip ahead of the newsman here.
Okay.
Integral parts of the Big Apple history. Mamdani's deputies promoted a new campaign in May to celebrate the city's ethnic neighborhoods with a map entitled New York City's Immigrant Enclaves that features 30 communities, including a number of Muslim communities such as Yemeni, Pakistani, Egyptian, African.
And that's really the issue, yes. I think, is we included some Muslim communities. So a little bit more.
This is quite instructive, though, about how Italians, Irish people, and Jewish people have been folded into whiteness, and that's why they're resentful.
I was going to say,
this.
Did he include like Russia, Ukraine? Because that also would include a lot of Jewish immigrants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He didn't just do like little Muslim.
No, he didn't do little Muslim.
Little Mecca?
Yeah. That's all New York now, though.
Palestinian neighborhoods also represented are Chinese, Korean, Albanian, Colombian, Dominican, Ecuadorian, Indian, Haitian, Polish, and other neighborhoods. But critics Polish. Are ripping the map for ignoring, if you want to pull that up a little bit so they can see it, ignoring European neighborhoods that were the original little, such as Little Italy, or the longstanding Irish and Jewish neighborhoods that helped build New York City throughout the late 1800s and early 1900s. Queens Republican councilwoman Joanne Arriola ripped the city hall for exclusionary graphics and told New York Post that it appears Mamdani doesn't think Jews, Italians, and Irish count. The Post reported they were able to get a little Beau Tibet in there. But what about the original little neighborhoods, Little Italy, Councilman Arriola said? And what about the areas like the Woodlawn in the Bronx, which...
You can tell this is PB's first time reading this.
Yes.
Yeah. ...are home to plenty of Irish immigrants. Do the Irish Italians not count for mayor's office? State Assemblyman Kalman Yeager bashed Mamdani for erasing Jews.
So basically all the conservatives have decided we need to celebrate diversity even more harder.
They're literally doing woke scolding, but for groups that... Like
it's a woke mob
are no longer marginalized. I mean, in the sense that at least Irish and Italian people are broadly considered white people in New York.
For the
and
most
look,
part, they're fifth, sixth, seventh generation New Yorkers.
Right, they like
have, that's grandma.
Yeah.
Here's Mamdani on the hot seat.
Oh, good.
Now, he was talking about some, like, good Lena Khan type of initiative about click-to-cancel in New York, but, you know, the real issue is where's Little Italy on the map?
The hot seat, like a pizza pie. Yeah.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. Can you please address the controversy that has developed over the city's immigrant enclaves?
He's like,
list?
Please don't laugh. Please don't laugh.
Do you believe
laugh.
That there are neighborhoods that were left off that list? And if the city plans to add more, which other neighborhoods do you think should be added?
Yeah. So this map was initially created by the prior administration in 2023. And when we inherited it, we added a few additional neighborhoods. It's clearly not an exhaustive list of the more than 200 ethnic communities that call our city home. And we're going to be making additional changes in the future to reflect that. And that includes adding Little Italy to the map. And that includes adding Little Italy to the map.
Oh, Little Italy.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're going to go to Kate.
This press conference should be held at that children's podium he had when he announced
yes.
the universal child care.
Right. I mean, the reporter might as well have been going goo goo gaga.
I just
thought slow down. My crayon broke.
Yeah. It's not even an Italian community really anymore. Like, it's a tourist area for Italian favored.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm sorry for all this erasure.
How dare you say that?
Jonathan Balschwet writes in, this is going to be really awkward when Emma sees her Italian husband in this video talking shit about Mamdani for his anti-Italian racism.
Well, I mean, the Italian version of the ADL, and I use that. I use that. Make sure you get the text in this, Brian, because it's part on the right that I really want to include here. Because I would offer them a little bit of advice: is don't reveal yourself as insane right wing lunatics when you're trying to say, "Hey, don't hate us for our ethnicity." Zora Mamdani wants to erase Italian Americans. First, he denied our permit for Unity Day 2026. Now he is excluding Little Italy as recognized location altogether on the map. Italian Americans built New York City. Not third world Ugandans.
Oh my god.
Take it easy. Just because they don't eat prosciutto.
We have some really great IMs here. Not Andrew Cuomo says, New York Italians famously a quiet and unrepresented bunch.
Yeah, well,
not in culture or media or anything.
Is this the organization founded by Joe Colombo?
Yeah, so this is the IACRL, and if you go to their Wikipedia here. Yeah.
I knew this.
The Italian American Civil Rights League was an American political advocacy group. Apparently still is, and according to their Twitter, based in New Jersey.
They're committed to civil rights.
Exactly, they love it. Formed in New York City in April 1970. This is just what Wikipedia says, so don't, you know, shoot the messenger. William Santoro.
Literally.
Exactly. William Santoro, a defense attorney who represented numerous Colombo crime family figures, handled the legal work to incorporate the league. Although its stated goal was to combat pejorative stereotypes regarding Italian Americans and their alleged mob connections, the group ironically functioned as a public relations firm to deny the existence of the Italian American mafia and polish the image of prominent mobsters.
Okay, Matt, as somebody with the academic background that you have, is ironically being used correctly there?
I mean, sort of, in that they're at least the stated goal was to combat pejoratives, and what they're actually doing was to deny the existence of the Italian American mafia.
And it was founded by a representative of the Colombo crime family.
I mean, just kind of
represented by Joe Colombo himself, the head of the family.
That's amazing.
Everyone deserves legal representation. So as I say, the Italian ADL.
But how can they have negative, like, so if they're the Italian ADL, it's like they have negative money at their disposal to do lobbying efforts. I mean, they're not really doing that much to combat this here. The idea that Italian people are associated with the mob, it feels like it's kind of well established that people think that.
Well, it's like, I mean, that's the thing, is they clearly lost.
Yeah, yes. What I'm trying to say is, like, the ADL is well-funded and is aggressive in doing what they can.
Although, I think the ADL is probably going to be remembered the way we remember this organization.
Pretty sure Joe Colombo was shot at an Italian-American civil rights demonstration. Joe Colombo. I think that's where he was shot.
It says originated 1970, made great again in 2023.
Made great again.
I will say it's not literally Manhattan. It says New Jersey there.
Italians in New Jersey.
So I don't know why the IACRL doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
Yeah,
isn't based in Little Italy anymore. But maybe they should take some.
What brought them back? What was the need to come back in 2023?
All the anti-Italian discrimination that was going on.
Oh, that was probably when the Eric Adams math came out.
Right.
I don't think they had a problem with Adams. Yeah.
Frank Fisto, as an Italian, I'm very offended that PBD is doing Italian face. My culture is not a costume.
That is grandma.
Dave from Jamaica, if memory serves, that part has not seen new Italian immigration for like decades. Yes.
You are not a New Yorker. You have no clue.
Oh, that is my husband, by the way.
I don't consider you to be my mayor.
Get that guy a voice acting role.
Rick from PDX. PBD really wishes he could be Italian based on his obsession with Casa D'Angelo. Mike Drew Me says, Matt, did you put together the story just for That's Grandma sound drop?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Otherwise, I would have just kept it to Left Reckoning.
That is Grandma.
Josh in California, Mayor Mamdani, why do you intend to erase Italian heritage from the earth?
Because he hates Italians, Jews, and Irish people.
Yep.
It's clear as day.
It was basically, yeah, that, I only like immigrants that came in after the Ellis Island period, basically.
They had to earn it.
Sema's Cedarland, Sopranos Butchie accidentally walking from Little Italy to Chinatown in the span of a short phone call settled their lack of an enclave back in the early 2000s. Grandma, Joe Colombo is a nice man. Disparaging him is racist.
I don't consider you to be my mayor.
One more Italian I am here, and then we'll move on. Owen from Boston. This is the Columbus Day episode of The Sopranos. I mean, unironically, Andrew Cuomo took up that mantle. No, I think maybe 2023 was that. No, he was out of office by that time when Andrew Cuomo was upset about. Yeah, that was Adams. Commie Tommy, that Italian guy sounds like Bev Bighead from Rocco's Modern Life. I don't know the reference. All right, let's. What do we have here on the sound sheet? All right, let's. We had some fun, but I want to talk about this story three just before I forget. three and four here. Marco Rubio took out an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, Secretary of State, to explain why we are, according to him, dismantling the International Criminal Court. I'll read a little bit from this op-ed, and then we'll hear it from his own mouth in a video that he put out on Twitter. But he writes, most of us would struggle to imagine a world in which U.S. soldiers, police officers, border patrol agents, and elected leaders could be dragged before an international court, tried by judges from random countries across the globe, found guilty under international laws we neither consent to nor control, and then imprisoned thousands of miles from America. Now, I would say that most of us would struggle to imagine that if we hadn't been U.S. soldiers that had committed war crimes.
Yeah, they were criminals?
Police officers who'd killed people, border patrol agents who'd killed people, and elected leaders who'd helped commit genocide. But I guess I can't relate, and perhaps my empathy has hit a wall here. I don't really necessarily know if I can empathize with that situation entirely.
I can 100% imagine it, and I desire it.
Well, this is what he's trying to head off. I do think it's interesting that he opened with the American part, or like U.S. soldiers, people in our domestic context, because this is obviously about Israel. No. Yes. Obviously it's about Israel. But I do think they're probably worried about, you know, the camps that they've set up here that dozens of immigrants have died in that we know of. You know, 11 people killed by ICE under Trump 2.0. I'd be a little bit worried about that if the International Criminal Court was actually taking that kind of thing seriously. But he continues. But that is what the International Criminal Court now claims the power to do. The ICC was born at the turn of the century. At first, it was marketed as a narrow backstop to prosecute the gravest crimes. Now the ICC and its allies seek a standing world tribunal with near unlimited reach and power to override the courts and constitutions of the U.S. and other sovereign states and to prosecute and arrest our citizens. Americans never...
I mean, can I just stop there? Yeah, other sovereign states, does he mean white sovereign states? Because the whole point of it originally was like, yeah, like just because your country says you can do that, I mean, in Rubio's case, atrocity in Africa doesn't mean we care about what your government thinks. This is just saying, hey, you know what? Maybe the U.S. Constitution doesn't protect, I don't know, Henry Kissinger from war crimes, too.
The ICC has long faced criticism from the left for being a body for the West to go after rulers in the global South that it doesn't like. Yep. And that's historically what it has been until
a big genocide that happened.
The big genocide, but also Putin. I mean, charging Putin under the ICC was a big step. And then Benjamin Netanyahu was a big step. The International Court of Justice, where South Africa brought the genocide proceedings against Israel, is a body that has more, slightly less Western influence and is a bit more fair, but it doesn't have the ability to go after individuals like the ICC does. Now, there are no Americans that currently have ICC warrants against them. Benjamin Netanyahu does, and Yoav Gallant, the defense minister from Israel, does. So the fact that Marco Rubio keeps insisting that Americans are his focus seems a little disingenuous because there have been no there's been no ICC warrants issued for Americans. But I'll read a little bit more from this and then we'll hear from him. Americans never agreed to any of this. Both of our major political parties oppose the prospect of handing a distinct global court the power to prosecute and jail our own citizens. President Clinton refused to submit the Rome Statute, the ICC's founding charter, to the Senate for ratification due to his concerns about significant flaws in the treaty. 2 years later, a bipartisan Senate supermajority passed the American Service Members Protection Act, authorizing the president to use all means necessary, including military force, to prevent the ICC from detaining or arresting Americans. So we can just stop there for a second. Citing Bill Clinton refusing to submit the Rome Statute, which, yes, is what at the end of the 90s is what founded the ICC, to the Senate for ratification as some sort of piece of evidence that this is a piece of bipartisan consensus is not the flex you think it is, buddy. Bill Clinton was just in Michigan talking about Judea and Samaria.
Yeah, lock them up.
You don't think that Israel was at the top of his mind during this period? So, no Americans so far have ICC warrants against them because the ICC has been largely a tool used by Americans for the purposes that I just described. But now we've committed genocide in such an obvious goddamn way that the institution in and of itself is in question. And yes, the ICC was not officially created until 98, 97, 99. I'm forgetting the exact year, but it's around that time period. But the concept of international courts and charging war criminals in courts comes out of the Holocaust and World War II. And the fact that this government is undercutting that very international court framework born out of World War II and the Holocaust on behalf of Israel, which is presented as reparations for the Holocaust, when we know that's a lie, but that's how it's presented, is just like kind of a level of depravity and anti-history and moral degradation that is difficult for me to necessarily kind of articulate right now. So let's hear from little Marco here about, why we've got to do this.
For 250 years, Americans have governed ourselves as a free and sovereign people. We choose our own leaders, we determine our own laws, and when we're accused of a crime, we stand for judgment before a jury of our own peers. This is the essential and indispensable...
Which doesn't include anyone else in the world, because we are peerless.
Here's the question. What about if the crimes are committed against people who are not Americans? How about that?
Okay. This is the essential and indispensable feature of our form of government. It is the foundation of our shared way of life. But today, powerful people in faraway places want to take that away from us.
Oh.
They believe that they should be in charge of your laws, of your country, your
You're
life.
Literally...
And...
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Not... Conservative projection is at a fever pitch right now. This is... Just copy and paste this part, and this is what people think about what Israel's doing to our country. Keep going.
Agree. Halfway across the world, there's an institution that calls itself the International Criminal Court. Maybe
Ooh.
You've heard of it. Maybe you haven't. But chances are you don't know the names of its judges, of its prosecutors, or its president.
I don't know the name of our judges.
And you shouldn't have to. But as we speak, the ICC and its friends are waging a war against our country, not with bullets or missiles, but with statutes, and compacts, and the force of so-called international law. When the ICC was born 24 years ago, they told us that it was merely a narrow backstop, a global court that would step in to prosecute only the gravest offenses.
Like genocide.
Things like genocide and war crimes. And only when a nation's courts were unable to prosecute them on their own. But the truth is, it was something far more radical and extreme. It was a global tribunal staffed by unelected globalist bureaucrats who claim their power is almost unlimited. The danger of this global court has only continued to grow.
All right, I think we get the picture.
Yeah, why are you in jail yet? I have another clip from Marco Rubio here that's related. It's actually from only a couple weeks ago. And that thing he says about so-called international law or whatever, right? International law is something that these people love to dismiss. Imperialists, Zionists too. You'll see this thing we have going on in New York City where synagogues will sell, have these real estate events where they sell Palestinian land, and people get really upset about it. And they're like, well, internationalized in American law, so what are you going to do about it? Well, here's little Marco invoking international law here, correctly, right, about the Strait of Hormuz. It's not within international law to block international waterways, which is what Iran is doing. But then you'd have to confront why they're doing that, because it's also not within international law to, like, bomb schools or heads of state or military leaders, as we have done to Iran, provoking them to close the Strait of Hormuz. Here's a little Marco on June 23rd.
About Hormuz, if possible, can the U.S. and allies, can they guarantee navigation, freedom of navigation in the state?
Well, that's the law. It's an international waterway. No country is allowed to charge tolls or fees on an international waterway. That's existing international law.
Existing international law. How quaint, Marco.
Which is funny because Trump just now just said we're going to charge tolls for the Strait of Hormuz instead of Iran.
Well, that's the situation we get to now.
Yeah.
So we've dispensed this international law, which actually was serving us. It wasn't built to, like as Marco said, to empower the globalists. It empowered us. But now we can't say, hey, we should follow international law because we don't care about that anymore. We'll go kidnap Maduro. We'll go bomb Iran, whatever we want. So Trump says, no, we'll do the tolls. And then Iran says, I appreciate you accepting the idea that we can charge tolls on an international waterway, which had been not within international law prior to this. But we're going to be more sensible and charge less of a toll than Trump does, because he's not realistic about it, just saying 20%, which is just collapse the economy. We're going to be the reasonable ones. The reasonable international waterway closers are Iran. This is a race to the bottom. You cannot keep destroying international law and expect that it's just going to rebound to our benefit. We aren't that strong. America is not that strong. We cannot do this, any of this shit, through brute force. We couldn't save the Suez Canal through brute force. We can't reopen the Strait of Hormuz through brute force. But guess what? We've invested billions and billions to trillions of dollars on the idea that we can solve all of our problems with brute force. And so now we're stuck between what we said we can do and the inability to do anything else because we haven't invested toward it.
And genocide is a term under international law that actually has legal ramifications. So that's why Rubio says incredulously, it's supposed to be there to prosecute crimes like genocide.
Yeah. Guilty as charged.
Yeah, there you go. And so that's why there is an aversion to the term, even though anybody who has like a basic understanding of what that looks like knows that it constitutes what Israel's actions have been.
And clear intent, right?
And the U.S.'s.
Like, Israel wants fewer Palestinians in the area so they can expand their borders.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear what the imperative is.
Scrounger, isn't this how the League of Nations was not even taken seriously, and then World War II?
Yeah, don't be so negative.
Hungover substitute teacher, I will cry with joy when all these politicians are sitting in the box at The Hague. I would love that. Yikes says, let's not forget that we as the U.S. see ourselves as the arbiter of what is legal and what is not on an international scale. We stick our noses into everyone's business, whether they want it or not. Trump change. Is Rubio talking about CECOT? That could be it. That could be interesting in terms of what he's referring to. Not Your Property says, I think the Trump administration might be afraid of the ICC over bombing fishing vessels and starving Cubans.
I'll be honest, like, I don't think it's any particular one thing. Just like it wasn't any particular one thing that made Bill Clinton react and say, we're going to reserve the right to defend ourselves militarily from international criminal court. This is about American supremacy.
Yep. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, right now the NDAA is being debated, and there is a provision in it, in the spending bill, that would basically permanently enmesh the U.S. military with the Israeli military. So, you know,
contact your representatives.
Exactly.
About that.
Exactly. We have a link to that down below. Josh in California, New York Times headline, Jeffries to oppose cutting off aid to Israel. but calls for a major reset. I saw that.
That's like me when the video game gets too hard.
Yeah.
Get a major reset on it.
Galactic Nurse Bugs. Yes, Emma, every Holocausted people needs to develop its own ICC, just like the Jewish people did after World War II. That's just how this works. I think you're being very sarcastic there. The idea, I mean, he's essentially arguing that, like, the Germans should have been able to handle this internally after they committed the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Let's do this, okay, hold on. I'm just trying to make sure that we have a ton for the Michigan race. I would like to do, five through nine, Matt, if you don't mind pulling that up, I'll read some IMs. Heated bribery. Why does Marco Rubio sound like the wet dreaming brother in 51st Dates? What, are you saying he has a lisp?
That is a deep reference.
It's a deep reference, but actually I know that reference quite well. It's Sean Astin who plays him, and he makes like six different bold choices for the character. Lisp, closeted gay guy, mesh shirt.
51st Dates is a strange
and many
movie.
More. It's very strange, but it was kind of a classic. I mean, Drew Barrymore was a rom-com queen and for us growing up. At least for my money.
That is grandma.
That is grandma. Proud, haughty Raban says, without Little Italy on the map, how would I be able to find an authentic Sbarro pizza? Okay, we have the Michigan stuff? Okay. So, all right, we'll start off here and then get to the substance. We have an all-hands-on-deck situation here, folks. Folks! You're about to really enjoy this clip, but I want you to enjoy it a little bit less than you should. A little bit less than I'm enjoying it, because I'm genuinely starting to get a little concerned that Haley Stevens is so ridiculous and funny that it is obscuring the fact that she is a supporter of genocide and would be a very bad senator from Michigan. And I wonder if her team understands this and is leaning into her bizarre nature, because it's almost like the Trump effect. He says the most horrendous things, but he's so bizarre and funny that people don't really register it in the same way as when, say, you know, a Rubio or a J.D. Vance says it. She's got that quality about her. Here's a clip that was making the rounds on Twitter last night, and I must have watched this probably 12 times.
I am going to be working on our behalf. I am going to be telling the stories on our behalf. And you better believe I'm going to be doing it with a little bit of joy, a little bit of enthusiasm, a little bit of energy, and a little bit of stick it to them. Because that's the Michigan way.
Can we please play the final 5 seconds of a little bit of stick it to them? When she does the Michigan fist there, buddy. Yeah.
On our behalf. And you better believe I'm going to be doing it with a little bit of joy, a little bit of enthusiasm, a little bit of energy, and a little bit of stick it to them. Because that's the Michigan way.
Yeah. She's got me all riled up. I like how she gesticulates to the audience. Like, she's like, come here. It's the opening number of a musical. Come round. Come join us. I don't
know how long I've been waiting for a politician to tell my stories.
Yes.
On your behalf.
On your behalf.
So, what kind of promise is that?
You made this point before the show that she doesn't have anything really aggressive or bold to offer, so she's just like using like
violently suggesting nothing.
Violently suggesting like I'm gonna run through you or now I'm gonna get it done.
And, I'm gonna bulldoze for our family values.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yes, sirree.
I'm gonna shove all your stories down their throat with a musket pipe.
I'm gonna break up. I'm gonna fund our ICE Patriots like at the speed of the UAW workers on the line. Get it, Michigan? So I don't know. I mean, I saw someone also say that she'd make a great museum guide. Someone replied to that to me on Twitter, and I think that is her true calling. Really, at the end of the day. But I don't know. I think it's distracting from her being, you know, for an ideological, like, center right winger who would be bad for the country. So, you know, enjoy the clip while you can. But this is what's happening actually right now in the Michigan primary. So outside spending in this race is just out of control. This is just in the last 7 days. Ad Impact has aggregated this. United Democracy Project in 7 days has spent $4.6 million on this race, and that is the AIPAC cutout. Now, Abdullah Sayed's campaign, that's, you know, on who's on air, Ad Impact points out. So this is for TV ads. Abdullah Sayed is like a little under 500K. That's his campaign. A Stronger Michigan is also a PAC around 300K. Fighting for Michigan, which is a group that's spending on behalf of Abdullah Sayed, is 65K. You can just see how Stevens has these outside groups that are backing her to the hilt. And on outside spending in the race in general, it's been $41 million in total. More than half of that has been directed to benefit Haley Stevens or to attack Abdullah Sayed. I can give you the numbers here. $10.7 million of that $41 million has gone to support Mike Rogers, the Republican candidate. So you can strip that out of the total. And then we're looking at around $30 million here, right? So $2.3 million has benefited Abdullah Sayed. And when you look at the outside spending, his father-in-law has been donating to the PAC Fighting for Michigan, but he's not taking corporate PAC money. And that spent $1.5 million so far on his behalf. But you also have National Nurses United and Common Defense that are supporting Abdullah Sayed. And still, he's being completely dwarfed with in spending. The rest of it, United Democracy Project, that's the AIPAC cutout, $15 million. A Stronger Michigan is a dark money super PAC that has spent $12 million of that total. So Abdul's spending is just a fraction here. And that dark money group, A Stronger Michigan, some reporting has indicated that it's tied to a corporate strategist named Jeffries Murray. I don't know much about him, but this is the problem with our campaign finance laws. The fact that this is legal at all is absolutely insane. But let's show some of those ads here just to give you a sense. Which one is the AIPAC ad? Let's do, nine here. This is the latest one to hit the airwaves, funded by AIPAC via the United Democracy Project against Abdul Al-Sayed.
Leaders of Democratic women's groups call Abdul El-Sayed's attacks on Haley Stevens sexist and the same tired playbook used against women. That's what El-Sayed does. El-Sayed called Michelle Obama's work uninspired and ineffectual. He claimed Gretchen Whitmer was bought and sold, and an employee said they were offered payment to keep silent after witnessing El-Sayed disparaging women. Let's reject Abdul El-Sayed's sexist attacks. UDP's responsible for the content of this ad.
So that's what AIPAC has to say about that race. They're really running with that, huh? Abdullah's a sexist
not a
thing.
A really good quote there. And
it's so paper thin.
He was taking all of those people seriously and attacking them by their work.
Yes.
The cynicism, the idea that these are so-called women's groups, and Shannon Watts, who I've seen echo like a psycho on Twitter, they are absolutely... doing a disservice to any sort of anti-misogyny efforts.
Yes.
By using it to just smear people who aren't centrists. It's disgusting. And as we continue to devolve into fascism, these people will have played a key role in giving the tindling to it and turning people off these sorts of appeals, which should be deployed for good and to make the world a better place and not protecting somebody who's taken a bunch of money from the Israel lobby.
Well said. And then here is this other ad. This is the Stronger Michigan ad from the dark money that I just mentioned. And the reason that Michelle Obama quote was included in there is because right now both campaigns are really focused on turning out the black vote in Detroit. This is what most elections experts say is key to whoever is victorious in this primary. And so this is an ad that has been running across the state, and it is implying that Obama has weighed into this race and has endorsed Haley Stevens, and yet, but they're using an old clip from her House race.
My husband worked at Ford for 41 years.
My father worked for General Motors for 30 years.
And when they came for our auto jobs,
Haley Stevens stood up.
She was chief of staff to President Obama's auto rescue.
And Haley Stevens, by the way, she was a critical part of my team that helped the American auto industry come roaring back.
That saved 200,000 Michigan jobs.
She helped save jobs for my own family.
If President Obama trusts her,
so do I.
Stronger Michigan is responsible for the content of this ad.
I mean, it's just the our campaign finance laws. It is astonishing what is allowed on air.
Also, the UAW has filed a cease and desist on, I'm not sure if it was that ad, but one of those ads shows the UAW logo.
And they've endorsed Abdul Al-Sayed.
Yeah.
Yes. So, good for them. And here is a voter. Sam Robinson is a reporter who's been going around and speaking to Michigan voters. And we play the clip yesterday of one of the people he spoke to. Here's somebody else that he spoke to. This is Dennis Boatwright, director of the Center for Pan-African Studies in Detroit, talking about his assessment of the race, and he touches on that ad and like what some of the campaign tactics have been in terms of tying Obama to Haley Stevens.
Donnie and in New York, the current mayor is winning with landslides, but people are losing faith in the current status quo black politician, and you slowly see them being displaced. And this is why, one of the reasons why, even Detroit, a good friend of mine, by the way, Rashida Tlaib, she's win by landslide because the typical Hakeem Jeffries type, old guard Clinton, even Obama, by the way, and I like Obama, they're being replaced by people that the younger people feel that they are responsive to their needs and ideas. So I can see even in this election is the Democratic Party have to give us more than Trump is the boogeyman. He's the bad guy, which he is. But what I'm saying is you have to have more answers and more solutions than just blaming everything on Trump. And this is why we see a lot of younger people like yourself that's getting disenchanted with them and replacing them people with like people like Mondani, who are taking critical position even towards Israel and for the Palestinian, but yet he's still winning against all of those lobbyists who are paying to try to get him out of here. So I'm and this is why, by the way, you even have Cori Bush starting to come back and run again, because they see an opening that people started tired of the status quo politicians, people like yourself.
What do you make of Obama being invoked in this Michigan Democratic primary race? He's in the ads with Haley Stevens. Of course, he hasn't weighed into this race specifically, but Haley is using him saying good things about her in television ads. And when I talk to people that have voted for Haley Stevens, they tell me that that's why.
Oh, yeah, that's why. And you also will see with Obama is that there's no pushback on that widely circulated campaign ad that she's using him. But it also says, and I hate to say it, that some of these politicians don't have their own ideas, so they got to use Obama, they got to use Rahm Emanuel, they got to use Bill Clinton in order to get themselves credibility, whereas you look at people like Mondani and Rashida Tlaib, for example, they use themselves.
Yes.
Also, does Michigan not remember Flint? Obama drinking Flint, Michigan water?
I mean, they may.
They do remember that.
They may. And like these lazy assumptions by Haley Stevens may not, and the people spending on her behalf about what black voters think may not pay off. We shall see. But you see how Zoran has changed so much. Like, you know, Mamdani being cited there by him multiple times is an example of how winning begets winning and the snowball effect starts to take place. Because once you show people that a better politics is possible, they are less likely to accept the boilerplate answers and lack of vision from other candidates. And so it is just, you know, perhaps there's sometimes a debate in leftist circles about an overfocus on electoralism. look, it can get you burned. You can back a candidate and then not be who they say they were, for example, like in my instance, and this happens a lot. But
yeah.
I get enthusiastic about electoralism, if you want to call it that, because I know what it can signal once you start to rack up DSA wins, once you start to rack up leftist wins. It means it makes it more likely across the country for that argument to have salience.
It's a little thing called showing and not telling.
Yep.
Which which isn't to say that you can have a overthrow capitalism through it, but it's a good place to start. And it's much better doing something than just, again, sitting and telling. There's a little secondary part of this. People should follow Samuel J. Robb, at Samuel J. Robb, Sam Robinson on
local journalist
on Twitter. Through this. He's following this election very closely. This was this funny thing here, though. Hassan sort of flagged this and Sam saw it. It says, apparently I also sound like Haley Stevens. Hassan,
oh,
said, so
no.
I want to play this clip a little bit because it is, you can hear it a little bit.
Yeah. And what do you make of folks nationally?
This dude's accent. That's Michigan, right?
You're watching MSNBC or CNN and they're talking about Michigan's Senate Democratic primary as like a inflection point within the party. They say, well, if Abdul wins, the party's going to go this way. If Haley wins, the party's going to go
Bro also sounds like Haley Stevens a little bit.
Hassan, why'd you got to do him like that?
But yeah, shout out Sam, who's been doing great work up there.
Yeah. Jehovah Witness says, I'm a half hour behind, but my grandmother immigrated from Italy when she was 4 and lived in New York, and the fact that PBD is dressed up in olive oil face is just appalling.
That is grandma.
Nick Tatership of the Proletariat says, that Obama ad could be devastating. My old black mother promised me to vote for Mamdani after I explained his policies multiple times versus Cuomo, and she still ranked him 3rd and didn't rank Mamdani. There's something in their brain that doesn't allow them not to vote for a centrist. I don't know if there's something in their brain. Older people are more conservative by nature. It doesn't just mean older black voters. But I think there's conservatism and ranges of it within the political spectrum. And if you're black, you're more likely to be a Democrat. And then you're on the, if you're older, typically.
Look,
right,
old people are
right
not. Old people are just, and this is painting with a very broad brush, but often not receptive to new information. So, like in the Massey Gallrain race, Massey cleaned up with people, everybody under 55, and still got absolutely destroyed in the election because every single boomer's like, oh, Trump and the Republicans are telling me to vote for this guy. I'll vote for him.
And what I'm saying is your mom in the primary. In ranked choice voting may not have been swayed by Mamdani, but did your mom vote for him in the general? Does she like how he's doing now? Is she more open to arguments about Mamdani? I mean, that's part of what happens here, is people get to see what's possible and it changes people's minds, and you're able to break through some of the conditioning about how if you're a leftist, you're not a real Democrat and you're going to lose to Republicans, which is the fear that they play into, that a lot of older voters are still clinging to.
That is grandma.
That's grandma. Polish onions. Chuck Schumer's mic caught him passing gas on the Senate floor earlier today. The most entertaining thing he's done in a speech in years. I never believe those videos.
I don't either. What happened?
It's just sometimes a noise. There's a lot of people that think that they've heard someone pass gas on camera. And again, this is my least favorite topic of all time in general. So I need to read the IMs before I say them out loud. I don't want to think.
Puritanical.
I don't want to think about it. That is, I am puritanical about potty stuff, and yet this is where I work.
Potty stuff.
Yes, I hate it. I hate talking about it. And Sam loves talking about it more than anything, maybe except maybe apples and Social Security. So,
do you want to see a Meta guy selling Meta AI glasses to an Atlantic writer?
I would like that. I would like to see it, yes.
This is at Boz Tank, who is Boz. I'm not sure what his full name is. But he is the Meta CTO, the Chief Technical Officer. And so some of you might be looking at these glasses as like, oh, this is a huge invasion of privacy. I feel like almost like people when Google Glass came out 20 years ago, I feel almost like compelled to violence because I feel like I've offended and my privacy is being invaded by somebody who might be taking surreptitious pictures of me. Well, Meta has a response to, I mean, sort of why we might need to accept this technology, which should be banned. Here it is.
The program that has been written about is called NameTag. The idea of that is not, here's a person you haven't seen before, here's who they are, here's their LinkedIn. It's that this is a person you've met or who's in your Facebook graph.
Encrypted locally to your device, somebody that you met in person with your glasses on, who introduced themselves, or you said, okay, this is David, remember this person. Only available to you when you're wearing your glasses. This is a person you've met before, here's their name, they're right in front of you. That's what I'm talking about. That's what we call a name tags feature.
So the laugh there before we let him go on, I've watched people lie on camera an awful lot and give assurances that they couldn't maybe really fully underwrite. And that's the sort of alarm bells going off. You remember in the Secession when it's like, we can hear you?
Yes.
That's what this reminds me of, because it's like, it's just all these assurances. It's just encrypted to your glasses. Sure.
Sure, buddy.
Sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, wait. It's Meta.
Meta AI glasses.
Yeah. So Meta, the same company that snuck in that AI feature
that everyone had to manually do,
and then they had to retake it because they were taking all of our content and putting it into their AI and trying to do it surreptitiously without telling users. We should trust them that they're only collecting what they say.
And won't share it for now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe later we might.
I don't know. To investors.
That's what I'm talking. That's what we call a name tags feature.
Right.
And it's, so I think people get confused because they hear face recognition and they think, oh, there's a central face database that everyone's being scanned constantly into.
There is.
It's not that.
ICE is using it.
It's still controversial. I think it's, you know, one of those things that you can't even do in some states based on the state laws. You know,
we've
got BIPA in Illinois and QB in Texas and these things.
Seem familiar with those,
it's
Betty.
A thing that, I think it'd be a great feature. By the way, and I've told the story through the blind low vision community, or told the story through Oscar Mike. You'd use it. I'd use it. Like, I go to parties where I like definitely have met somebody before. You're a journalist. You must meet people constantly.
Oh my
and
God.
And constantly in your head, be like, I know this person, name, face, what was the last time we talked? What's the context?
Yeah, you can ask them that.
Can you, I mean, they literally want a freaking personal assistant. This is a scene in The Devil Wears Prada with, you know, like how Anne Hathaway's character is able to get Meryl Streep to trust her is that she remembers all of the people and is able to tell her if she forgets a name. These tech freaks, the social anxiety that they have or that they tap into.
Yeah.
And they provide solutions that should just be solved by the spontaneity of human interaction. If they sound like the Manosphere people who put all of these barriers in between you and socialization and then pretend it's about connecting.
And then create more problems. Like the idea, okay, I'm sorry you feel a little bit awkward saying, oh, sorry, have we met before? And so the solution to that is to introduce spy glasses that mass surveil everyone at every time and could easily be used, they already are, to record people against their will. I can't believe I'm seeing people post Meta AI stuff on Instagram. Like,
I know. But this is what they're saying. We need to do the surveillance state to solve your social anxiety.
Because I'm awkward.
Yeah.
Maybe there's one. Maybe there's a little bit more here.
We call it the cocktail party problem. It's a very universally human problem. Aww. Nearly every human I talk to, no matter what their status of their vision or their memory is, understands that this is a problem that would help them feel more comfortable in social situations if they had it. But it has to be done in a way that people...
I'm sorry.
They're creating the social anxiety and exploiting it. It is psycho.
The disabled thing where he goes into like what the lower people with memory issues or something like that. That is, I'm sorry, there has to be other solutions besides clearly what this guy wants, which is states to stop passing legislation, stopping this sort of face scan to go through. It should absolutely not be. In Japan, it's Japan where they had to say that when phones take pictures, they have to make an audible shutter sound because people were taking surreptitious pictures of women on public transportation. Good. Every law like that, good.
I agree. It's insane.
Such a small problem. Like, you forgot somebody's... acquaintance's face. That's ridiculous.
But it, I mean, it makes me sad. Like, we are alienated from one another, and capitalism has created that problem. We don't have enough free time to socialize, to be our true selves, to live full lives. Yeah. Then, you know, to satiate that, we're given phones that, you know, like, I'm as online as anybody. You're addicted to it to a degree. It simulates some sort of social connection for a lot of people. It makes them more anxious. And then they sell you the cure to the problem they've created. It's very much like what the Manosphere does for men and their interactions with women. Like, they give them these patriarchal and retrograde dating views about, and they pretend like it's a science and it's all premised on superiority or like a very angry view towards women and a one-dimensional view of what they want. The men that consume it or boys learn those tools. They are not going to have success with and
both
sex
things are true.
Yeah, with women with those tools. So then what do you do? Well, time to sign up for more classes to learn how to be better with women. I mean, it's I don't know. I don't know how people sleep with themselves, but
got to return value to investors.
Yep, and that's where it's like endless growth is a and the concept of an under capitalism is a true danger to all of us because Facebook and Instagram, they've grown enough. Everyone's on it. There's not enough people anymore to join it. That's it. We're done. Okay. You don't need to grow more. Stop. But they need to. Statutory. I mean, like, the Supreme Court ruled that these companies have a fiduciary responsibility to increase shareholder value. It is U.S. law. So what are you going to do? Just, like, create a product that works for people and then stop? No, you've got to get them more addicted. You've got to create something else. We'll do surveillance technology. We'll do AI. We'll destroy the environment.
You need to get rid of rules that are in the way of them making more money.
We'll gobble up your water. I mean, Gulf Coast Grit, if they ever really do develop human-like robots loaded with the chatbot AI, then we are cooked as a society. Well, I think they're lying about that, so.
Human-like robots with a chatbot AI. I mean, those probably already exist, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the problem is it's a language model, so it's not really going to become, you know, smarter than all humans and fix all the problems.
How dare you say that? How dare you say that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not what investors are hearing.
Oh, yeah. They hear that, you think it's good now. It's going to get exponentially better. It's going to get exponentially better at, like, doing text-to-speech. A thousand times better than a human could ever read that.
Right. Albert Tom Torres says, I was in Puerto Rico last week and my family was talking politics and they asked me if Kamala Harris should run again. I said no and I preferred someone more to the left. And when they asked who I said AOC Mamdani type and they all lit up and started excitedly praising them. They were all once mainstream lib types who seemed really ready for something different.
I mean, that's really that's not going away. And I just looked at Janet Mills' statement on the ICE shooting and it's like, I understand everyone's scary. Everyone's scared. It's bad when things like this happen. We're going to look into it. It's like, oh, thanks.
Nice. All right. I want to get to one more thing here. Oh, okay. Let's do 18. This is silly, but I wanted to get to this. Do you have the in for Matt there? Because we're starting like a minute in, right? For this clip? For the clavicular clip. 18.
Oh,
oh yeah, just start like a minute in, Matt. And it's the higher quality one, right? Okay. So this story is kind of interesting to me. I know it's about clavicular, so bear with me, but I do.
Well, who is clavicular? This young influencer who started the sort of like looks maxing, hit yourself in the face with a hammer so it grows back more handsome sort of
thing. Right, right. So he's like somebody who's, you know, done a lot of cosmetic procedures at a very young age to look a certain way and a lot of drugs, right? Didn't he overdose on camera? And he's always clubbing. He's down in Miami. There are long-standing rumors that Peter Thiel has some linked to clavicular's rise, and I cannot confirm or deny that, but I can say that Peter Thiel and Palantir and all of his other investments are heavily invested in the state of Israel, that Peter Thiel and Jeffrey Epstein, who was quite likely a Mossad agent, had been communicating for quite a while prior to Epstein's incarceration, and had, and after those communications, coincidentally, Peter Thiel opened up a Tel Aviv office. So, but there are other billionaires that could be financing Clavicular here. Who really knows? However, he went over to Israel as a part of some PR push because they are having some bad public relations right now. I'm not sure if you guys have heard about this, but everyone's pretty disgusted with Israel for committing genocide.
Oh, yeah, right.
So they've got to pay people to come over and win back the youth. Netanyahu is freaked out about this. He's all over cable news saying that, you know, oh, don't worry, we're not going to need U.S. military support anymore. And that's why I'm pushing for us to permanently integrate our military and intelligence sharing in a way that the public has no input in it. But I'm definitely not worried about how young people, including young Republicans, are disgusted with Israel and want to sever ties immediately. So they are trying to do public relations to bring in younger influencers to make them be pro-Israel. However, there's a bit of an issue here, because in Israel, the population was a little upset about Clavicular coming to town, because he's one of the guys that was filmed earlier this year, or a year or so ago, at a club in Miami, singing along with Andrew Tate, the other brother, the other rapist brother, Nick Fuentes, and somebody else. Singing the Kanye West song that praises Hitler, and there was a Nazi salute that was, you know, also someone did it in there in on stream in that group, because they're all so edgy, right? And that's the other thing. I think Sneeko was a part of it. He's that other guy that is like pretending to be pro-Palestine just to do rage bait for Zionists. Just disgusting. People using the Palestinian cause as some sort of edgelord thing. Regardless, people in Israel were upset about this video. But Clavicular was like, hey, I came over here to give you guys good PR. Why are you pissed off at me? And I just found this to be kind of a revealing interview for a variety of different reasons, because he's too dumb to know that he shouldn't say what he says here.
Reality of Tel Aviv.
But you know what everybody in Israel is talking about right now, right?
Well, everyone in Israel is talking about, you know, what we're doing that's good. You know, so for you to kind of start the interview off in like a negative manner doesn't really make sense. You know, we came here after a ceasefire ended in a very unstable state, technically, to kind of show that, you know, Israel's a safe place. So for you to start off in an antagonistic way, I'm really, you know, kind of just confused.
But how can you not talk about
like
the song?
Poor journalist.
Just tell
tactic.
Me.
No. So if you're going to be negative, and ask about, you know, like old, you know, situations that are not so positive, then I really don't want to talk to you.
Last January is not that.
They're playing the old situation right now.
Where you know, old situations where you and everybody said Heil Hitler over and over again.
Old situation of me in the club in this same calendar year.
Yes, and I forgot to mention why this is another wrinkle that is interesting here, is that this is Channel 13 in Israel. Channel 13 has been at the center of Netanyahu's a battle with the Israeli Supreme Court. That's the channel that Netanyahu is defying the Israeli Supreme Court over, because it was a group of investors is trying to purchase it. They're critical of Netanyahu. The second authority is Israel's public broadcasting regulator, and the second authority would need to approve the purchase. And Netanyahu is trying to defy the court to block the purchase because they're critical of him. So it's just interesting that this is the channel that he's on, that they're pushing back against Clavicular. Who knows how much Netanyahu's government was involved in bringing this guy over here. And he's basically like, hey, I was coming here to paper over you guys doing genocide and war. Why are you bothering me with the Heil Hitler song?
The old situation.
The old situation.
Old, you know, situations that are not so positive, then...
not so positive, yeah.
Last January is not that old, you know. You got kicked out of a club because of this.
Right after I was kicked out of the club, you know, the owner called me and profusely apologized.
That's a lie.
Offered me to come back and top my entire night. So it was just a mix-up.
No, that's a lie. So why not clean the page?
So why don't you clean the page and, you know, talk about how much I've done for this country's reputation, because it's in utter shambles, right? You go on TikTok, you go on any social media page, the amount of propaganda among Gen Z and misconceptions, you know, so that's what's doing the real damage, right? Not anything I've done. That, you know, we're here trying to set everything straight. I don't have to be in Israel. And if you're like, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. You know, I just woke up. I don't want to be talking to someone who's going to be rude.
We understand, but no, there's an online backlash, you know.
Because I'm here to do good things. So there's a backlash because of people like you.
There's
an online backlash because people like you.
Like me.
Talking about negative things. So why don't you
territory here, buddy.
So why don't you acknowledge the fact that I'm here doing a good thing for the country, showing off Tel Aviv's beauty, showing off that it's safe.
Okay. Propaganda.
So why don't you talk about that?
There's
and
women
then
here.
There won't be a bad PR. Okay? So you're the one who's causing these issues. So you are the one. You are the one who's doing this.
How can you not see
how
the comments?
How can you not see? Because I can't read them. It's in a different language. It's in
Don't you have
no!
begin translate?
I don't even know what. All right, so I can't. Oh, I have Google Translate. Yeah. Live on TikTok. Yeah, I could totally. Yeah, let me copy and paste every single little thing into Google Translate.
But you surely understand that people are angry.
No. Let me make you understand. I'm here for a good thing, and you're trying to drag me through the mud.
Well, you're not.
And, you know, give me reputational damage. So quite
What's
honestly,
wrong with apologizing about singing Heil Hitler?
No, this interview is
just
over.
Just apologize.
Why don't you apologize to me for... Why don't you apologize?
I need to apologize.
Why don't you apologize to me for wasting my time?
Why don't you apologize? Just apologize. That's it? זהו, ככה, הלך. הוא שומע? אוקיי, הוא עושה סלפי. אוקיי, יפה.
All right, I think we're good. Okay. So he walks out of the interview. Gosh.
I'm trying to do a good thing by whitewashing
your
insane country.
And you're being a little bitch about it. You can't let the Heil Hitler stuff go?
It's crazy that he can't even just say, like, yeah, I kind of wish I didn't sing Heil Hitler in the club.
Kind of.
Kill my fan base. Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why the fuck do you think I'm here?
Jordy PhD.
That would have been the political answer is like, actually, I'm trying to learn about these issues, and that's why I came to Israel.
Right. Come on, he just woke up.
I know. Just woke up. Can you never be a dick? God.
This guy's coming at me about all these negative situations.
I haven't even had my eggs yet.
I'm trying to be positive.
By eggs, I mean low dose of meth.
Trying to be positive, okay?
Socialist accountant says, I'm no expert on interacting with women, but apologizing and admitting you forgot her name is better received than a pair of surveillance glasses. That's from our other segment. Plus, you can use that money towards a nice dinner instead.
Computer, enhance.
There's got to be women who have been... There's got to be women who have been on dates and realized that the man that they're sitting across from is wearing glasses that
well I'm sure your
shape.
Eyes drift in an odd way
right they can still see your eyes exactly
yeah, like, but you also you're like staring at the screen of your glasses
you're like going cross-eyed
yeah
Grok undress her
Dave from Jamaica sir I'm being honeypotted I don't have time to read
he was walking around with people someone that people were suggesting was an IDF soldier influencer yeah so good luck clavicular weird ass name
go on I didn't know his real name until recently but I was reading an article of you know in the Jerusalem Post because this apparently is an outrage in Israel and his name is Braden Peters
no
Braden?
His name is Braden?
That's shocking.
God damn it. That's like the most stereotypical one.
I know. I can see why he went with clavicular.
Born in 2005. Damn. Feeling old as hell.
Do you feel old? Because he was talking like a toddler.
He was, yeah. I'd put go in good situation, well, not bad situation.
I meant
you
to
talk about
this,
bad stuff. I want to talk about good stuff.
Jordy PhD says, has anyone seen Clavicular and Nick Shirley in the same room?
You made me sad. I want to be happy.
Real Chuck Schumer says, this guy's on to something. TMR should only cover me for my good, for good things.
Yeah, and the good situations.
Yep.
Don't come to us about bad situations. Rather stop talking about.
Sema Cedarland said, Clavicular's likely not dumb, but socially autistic. Matt Bernstein did an excellent video on him and recommend you check it out. I haven't listened to that episode of Matt's show. I should check it out. I just didn't really want to spend...
What's socially autistic mean? Does that mean, like, there's nothing, like, neurologically different? It's just how you were socialized, or...
Maybe, but I guess you can still be on
that
the
seems wrong.
You can be on the spectrum, yeah, and be a bad guy like Elon Musk, you know,
right,
for example.
Yeah, and you
can,
you can
be on the spectrum and be dumb.
You, yeah, can have a bad. You can be on the spectrum, have a bad sense of humor, and they'd not be related.
Yep. Crisis Actors Guild. Haley Stevens is giving me Danny DeVito penguin vibes. California Resistance. Emma, he is from Hoboken. Clavicular is.
That is Grandma. You are not a New Yorker. You have no clue.
Potty Stuff says, classically, imperialism and ethnofascism are always carried out by the extreme upper class. Peter Thiel is a part of the human tradition, anachronistic as fuck.
I mean, could it be any more clear that sort of disappointed apartheidists like Elon Musk have taken control of so-called Western governments? Like the refugee thing for white South Africans isn't, you know, the big billboard people need for, yeah, this is a white supremacist freakout. The entire, like, reason for being ICE to be in the streets, people are like, well, they shouldn't be so like, they are there for a hysterical reason. It's a hysterical freakout that even has ICE existing.
Yeah. Five more and then we're gonna get out of here. Mitch McConnell's corpse says, on the topic of data centers, I don't know if you all have seen, but in Georgia they are now forcing people out of their homes to build more power lines for data centers. I did not see that.
But you do that to, I don't know, build a train track and all of a sudden it's communism.
Dmitry Medvedev says, will Meta glasses suggest epic negs when I speak to a human woman?
Give you epic negs.
Where'd you get those boots from?
They're interesting.
Yeah, no, I like them.
Further fodder. And do people really trust this psychotechnology enough to just start calling someone by your name, your glasses tell you to use?
Yeah, your glasses accidentally, yeah, get stuck on like the IMDb page for ER. And
so much worse than just asking.
Oh, I'm sure it's white centric as fuck.
Oh, totally.
Like, I'm sure if you're talking to somebody who's not white, it's going to give you the wrong name. You're talking to LeBron James right now.
Yeah, wow. Wow, this technology says this 15-year-old black boy is actually 42, and should be tried with as an adult. we had a guest. Our guest yesterday said that about facial recognition for age verification, that it is like obviously wrong when it's not white people. It's getting it wrong.
Just a few more billions of dollars invested into the technology, yeah, and it will be 75% accurate.
Hey, Trey says, I am a paramedic instructor and these Meta glasses are going to be insane for HIPAA. Also, there's a lack of communication skills among those in early 20s, and this isn't going to help. We need to learn communication with others and how to interact like rational humans. Insane, useless tech. And the final IM of the day. Alan Grant says, let's be real. The flags at half staff today were in honor of Sam Neill, not Lindsey Graham. That was the real tragedy of last weekend. Yes, that is very true. All right,
guys.
All
interns are at half staff for memory.
Oh, I don't know why I did that. All right. We will see you tomorrow. Appreciate you all, guys. Bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid.